This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Welcome to The Interview. I'm Andrew Damelin, your humble Raptors 905 reporter. And the Raptors 905 are back. Back in Mississauga for the first time in nearly 2 years, ready to play a home game in Canada for the first time since the pandemic cut everything short back in March of 2020. And on Tuesday, I had the thrill of going into the practice facility, being in Mississauga Paramount Fine Food Center for the first time since that fateful night in March when I was at the 905 game and the Raptors were in Utah and they were about to find out that Rudy Gobert had tested positive, which shut the entire world down. So I finally got to meet everybody. And one of the people that I met for the very first time who I had several conversations with was the 905 head coach, Patrick Mutombo. He had his first head coaching stint with the of any professional team with the 905 in that February G League bubble. His team went 12-3 and reached the semifinals. And we had a great podcast to sort of get to know each other a couple months later about his whole backstory and how he got over to the Raptors. He was an assistant for a few years, first with the Nuggets, then with the Raptors, and then a head coach of the 905. But I had never met him. So it was really cool to go over there and meet with him. And they say the first day of training camp for players is like the first day of school. You're really trying to make an impression. And that's pretty similar with me because I had never met Coach Mutombo. And if you listen to this interview, just by the sound of his voice and the pacing that and the purpose with which he talks, you can tell that there's a presence about him. And you want to make sure you're making the right impression whenever you talk to him. You want to make sure the preparation is good and that the quality of the question is delivered appropriately. So I had such a good time preparing for the interview, and Patrick had some amazing comments. And then after my conversation with Coach Mutombo, I spoke with the general manager, Chad Sanders. So if you'll note, I don't do the formal radio thing of introducing Chad in my recording. So just know that when the subject voice has changed, that's Chad Sanders, the general manager. So it was incredible to talk to both of them. So let's get to our conversation with Coach Mutombo. And my first question for him was, we know that it feels like the first day of school for the players, but does it feel like the first day of school for you?
Excited to get started, that's one. But then also, you get to set the tone and let them know what this year is going to be like. Expectations, a lot of correction, showing guys how much we have to grow to get to where we want to be. But it's very exciting. You know, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of life in the gym, especially on the first day.
So this is your third team as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any assumptions that have been challenged in your first two stints as a head coach where you're like, I didn't think about that, and the approach is going to change just a little bit one way or another?
That's a great question. I think things are constantly changing, right? And I'm evolving also, just taking, like, knowing where to, you know, how to pick and choose my spots. For example, I'm very meticulous and I'm very detail oriented, but I've learned that, you know, as practice unfolds and fatigue sets, it becomes more about helping them get through it and not stopping everything all the time like I would have done maybe last year, knowing that we're trying to get them ready for November 11th, you know, and that they're not going to be perfect today. That kind of stuff where it's just, okay, I know how far we have to go. I know how far we need to go. But then finding that balance between pushing, for them, you know, get them to their limit, and when they think they can't go any longer, make them go one extra step and then call it. You know, that kind of stuff I think I'm learning, and I've learned, and I'm a lot more comfortable.
Is there a difference when there's a 15-game season and a 50-game season, the approach and like the leash maybe gets a little looser in some senses? Or well, the hammer gets a little bit lighter in some senses?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm there yet. I don't know if I'm there yet. I think urgency is really, you know, at the core of me, you know, with whatever I do. And then besides, I look at it like our season is divided in two, really. Right? There's a first part, and then there's a second part, the 36th game, you know, for the season. So really, to me, we almost have like, you know, that first part, that's our first season. That's the one I'm focusing on, you know, where we got to get ourselves ready for when we start and trying to win that, and or at least be competitive enough to be relevant in that competition. And because of that, that dictates my internal urgency that I don't do a good job hiding, you know, and I just let the players know that's the deal. And besides, like, you know this, Andrew, I've always told you, I don't know if we can afford at our level here to be casual about stuff. I just don't think we can. You know, we have to work. These guys are trying to get places. They're trying to do things. And are we helping them by being casual? I don't think so. You know, that sense of urgency is to get them to where they said they wanted to go.
You mentioned that aspect of correction. Did you watch the Raptors game last night?
Yes, I did.
So first quarter, DeRozan's coming down the floor and Scottie Barnes picks him up and DeRozan gives him that up fake.
Yes.
How many times do you think the coaching staff told Scottie, like, okay, don't bite on that up fake, and then you see it happen? Did that give you flashbacks at all to maybe certain people you'd coached and seeing the up fake happen?
Oh gosh, you know, I saw I wasn't a shoot around that morning. Then I saw David and Justin in the afternoon. And for having coached in the league for a while, I told him, hey, what's the scouting report on DeMar DeRozan? He go, well, you got to send him to the left. I say, good. What else? Quiet. What else? And I start moving my head. Say, oh, yeah, you got to stay down on his pump fix. There you go. That's my answer right there. You tell them a million times until they get there. Because even people who've been in the league for a while who know the pump fake is coming still go for the pump fake. So you know it's coming, and you just got to hope that they learn and grow from there.
The mantra is still just win,
yes.
I imagine. Is there, in your two practices you've had, is there a player or two you've seen that's kind of an early front runner for the embodiment of that philosophy?
It's too soon. It's too soon. I think they understand it. I mean, they understand it, but it's one thing to understand it and to demonstrate it, you know? And we're not there yet. It's something that I think a lot of them we're gonna have to find in them. It'll take a lot of conversations, a lot of correction, a lot of running, a lot of for us to gel and understand that the bottom line is just win, because it helps all of us.
There's that element of them having to listen.
Yes.
And I was talking to Ish Wainwright's coach at Baylor, mm-hmm. Jerome Tang, the associate head coach, and he had this curiosity about him. It wasn't that he was just receptive to coaching. It was that he asked a lot of questions, yes, and was curious and willing to listen. Yeah. Is that a quality you look for in young players, especially that it's like, ooh, I got something here where they're curious to ask questions as well?
I don't know that I look for it. I know that I do respect it and I recognize it. And then some people are just not inquisitive, you know, and maybe it's on me to awaken that in them. Some are maybe a little bit intimidated. Some are reserved. Some maybe learn differently. So I've stopped looking for it and just recognize it when I see it and trying to leverage it the best way I can without excluding or outcasting those who don't have the same curiosity, because people are just built differently. I'm extremely curious, and I ask a lot of questions. But some people are just different, and some people get irritated by people like me, you know. So I just, you know, I learn to take them as they come, and then try to leverage and try to help them the best way we can.
So you've had a pretty small sample size, obviously, with the players, but you've had a bit of a.
There's excitement in the gym.
That's what you like to see?
There's life in the gym.
So you get the small sample size with the players, a bit of a larger sample size with your assistant coaching staff. There's the idea of finding your voice, of an assistant coach finding their voice. Do you take on that responsibility of helping a assistant coach find their voice? How have you found taking on that responsibility?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of my job, too. You know, part of my job is not only grow myself, grow, okay, as a leader and refine my leadership skills, but also grow our team, but at the same time, grow our coaches, you know, empower them to grow and develop. And part of it is helping them find their voice. We've used different tactics with other coaches to help them, you know, maybe project a little bit better or present with more clarity or with more authority, or even just organize their drills better or do the prep work with a little bit more detail, or, you know, encourage some things that they already do well and then add and challenge them in a different area to grow some more. Yeah, that's, and to me, that's the fun part, because ultimately we are helping people be a little bit better than when they first got to us.
And last one for you. I'm sure you've had tons of stories. All coaches talk about it's so hard to let a player go, to cut them, and they remember the heartbreak. But I could ask you about that, but what I'm also interested in is, do you remember a reaction you had in your 10 plus years as a coach telling someone near the 15th man or the 12th man here that they made the team? Is there a player that you remember telling, hey, you made it, and the reaction that they had?
Man, unfortunately, man, I've never had to do that. Like, I haven't been put in position where I was the one telling a player he made it. I've been in positions to come and congratulate a player because I've realized he made it, or call a player to go talk to the coach who's going to tell him he's not going to make the team, or call a player who's gotten cut. But that one I've yet to experience.
So how much are you looking forward to that, to telling a guy?
Like,
do you picture it?
I am. You know, I am. When we come to that, yes, I think, because it's just, you know, we don't realize it, you know, but this level means a lot to so many people. And life is about perspective, right? So we are where we are. And for some people, making this team would be the dream, right? And just telling somebody, hey, you've made it, man. What a wonderful feeling. I hope I get to experience it.
Awesome. I appreciate it, and appreciate the time, and I'll be seeing you in the days and weeks ahead.
Of course, of course. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. It's always good seeing you.
Coaches and scouts always say that you got to be in person to really evaluate a player effectively. And that all sounds true, but it's been anecdotal up until this point. You've now had the experience of actually, I think, watching a lot more stuff on TV than you've maybe wanted to, rather than travel. So in that time, have you seen a bigger edge, you think, from seeing someone in person versus TV? Or maybe the edge isn't quite as big as you initially thought?
You know, I was very fortunate that during COVID, I stationed myself in Nashville so that I could drive around and still hit as many, you know, games in the area. So I was still able to be in the gym once games were started back up, and it felt good to be back in the gym and watching games again. I think I like to see players in person because you can see so much more than what the TV shows. One, there's less distraction than when you're at home watching it on TV. There's always a phone call or something else that can happen that can lure you away from the TV. But two, you can't see the interactions with the players and their coaches, the interactions with the players and their teammates. The pregame warm-ups, the timeout dispositions, and things like that. So, to me, I still think we place a lot of value on seeing players in person and trying to get a full, I guess, realm of who they are as a person. How are they preparing themselves for the game? How are they preparing themselves for practices? Are they serious about, you know, their day-to-day, their work ethic, and the things they put themselves through? So, still put a major value on seeing guys in person.
Now, I imagine some scouts saw more games than others, perhaps. The travel wasn't as wide as perhaps. Have you heard maybe from your peers about lost value or not as much lost value in terms of seeing versus on TV versus in person?
Yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, we haven't really discussed like the lost value aspect. I think we know everyone kind of handled the time different on I guess, their attack to scouting. You know, some that weren't on the road and some that would drive and hit games in a region, and some that kept flying like nothing ever happened. So I think everyone handled things differently. You know, I think we did the best. We attacked it the best way that we thought that made the most sense, and then, you know, that was to have a couple people stationed in different areas and hit games in those regions, and so try to get as many eyes on players as possible, and so yeah.
So we're in the second day of camp, and the training camp roster has been released, and I found it so interesting that Juwan Evans is back with the team. Yeah. And so often the sort of nomadic philosophy of the minor league player is if I'm with a franchise for a season and it's not quite going up but lateral, then I'm going to switch teams. What is it about this place, perhaps, that drew him back to the 905 when it rarely is the case that someone sticks with the franchise this long?
Yeah, you know, ultimately his season was cut a little bit short last time with the hamstring injury and then COVID. So I don't think we got the full experience to go through a full year. And I think we were kind of trending upwards towards the end of the year as that team got hot in February, leading into when COVID hit and ultimately stopped us. So last year, you know, he did not join us in the bubble, and he took a chance going overseas. And I think went to Greece for a little bit. And then ultimately, you know, the decision came that he wanted to return to the G League. So had a talk with both Juwan and his agent. Discuss the opportunity that's here, and what that situation looks like, and he was on board with it. So, you know, we loved Juwan, we loved having him. It hurt us to lose him towards the end of the year with the hamstring. You know, he's a pit bull on defense. He's a scrappy, feisty little player, and he can truly lead a team as well. And he's not a selfish player either. So he gets others around him, you know, shots and makes them better. So we're excited to have him back. And, you know, hopefully have a full season with him, you know, pending if a call-up happens, we'll be glad to let him go. But, you know, we're glad to have him back with us.
Yeah, and he's got that NBA experience from a while back now, so I'm sure he's hoping to get back. So you got a 17-person training camp roster. It has to be cut down to 12, is that right?
Correct. So that's 17 with the two-ways. So it's 15 G League contracts and then the two-ways. And we'll ultimately have to cut it down to the 10 G League players.
So I'm sure in your experience and in coach's experience, they talk about the heartbreak of having to let a guy go. And that always gets the guys. But I want to ask about the other side of the coin. In your experience as a GM now, is there a memory you have of telling a kid you've made it and a memorable reaction from them in the celebration?
That's a tough one. I can't say there's a memorable reaction because I guess you really don't ultimately like sit down with those guys and tell them you made it. You know, it's more about they're hoping they don't get that call that, hey, we got to talk to discuss the alternate situation of being cut. So, you know, I can't say I have one of that situation happening. I don't.
Is there one where you've reported that they've been called up or that they're signing an NBA deal?
Henry Ellison last year was probably the best one when we signed him for a 10-day. Brought him to tears, you know, after the bubble, as well as just, you know, the conversation with all of our guys. You know, I love keeping in touch with Alizé and Gary Payton last year when they were called up, keeping track of those guys and being part of that, and hopefully to say that we're a small piece of that puzzle, their success stories, and both of them on NBA rosters now. So that's guy, you know, we stay in touch with all of them. Paul Watson last year, or was it two seasons ago when he got his 10-day, and then ultimately when he got his two-way with us, you know, being a part of that when he flew back to join us in D.C. and signed his contract with the Raptors for the remainder of the season for the two-way contract, was pretty cool to be part of that.
When you see Alizé grabbing offensive rebounds last night and putting things back, you just shake your head.
Yeah, I sat with Bobby last night in the game, and all we can do is be happy for him. You know, we don't, you know, of course, we want to get the win, but, you know, to be 6'7" and out there playing a backup five role, on a team that's, you know, had early success in the NBA, you know, we're happy for Alizé, and, you know, he brought his intensity. He does what he does. You know, he's out there hustling for loose balls and rebounds and putbacks, and he knows his role. And I think ultimately that's why you see guys like him succeed, because they're understanding of their role, and they go out there and they do it, give it their all.
And Henry had an amazing bubble last year. Yep. Gets the 10-day with the Raptors. And he, you know, I spoke with him a bunch actually too. And you grow a connection to them, whether you're a part of the team or like me, part of the media. And every attempt he had, that first game, he had a wide open three, he clanked it. And you're like, okay. And then Nick Nurse praised him afterwards. Yeah. He said he got to his right spots, finished well around the hoop, missed those wide open shots. But, you know, how small was his margin in retrospect, do you think, what he got for that when he got that 10-day contract.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've seen what he can do in the G League. He was great for us for a season and a half, and he came in and he made shots at a high clip, and he did it so well. And he made contested shots, and he made, you know, difficult shots. He made game winners. He did everything, you know, you could possibly imagine. And ultimately, you know, you get a 10-day contract, and sometimes it's you might only get really one or two opportunities on the court. Sometimes you might not get any at all on a 10-day contract. Don't even get a chance to get on the court. But due to our COVID situation, he was able to get a couple runs, and ultimately the shots didn't fall. Who's to say if that would have led to another 10-day? You know, we don't know. You know, I guess Dante or ended up being Freddie after that, you know, giving somebody else a different look. So could it have changed things? Maybe it could have. You know, I think he prepared himself for it. You know, I wouldn't say he didn't prepare himself. So he prepared himself for it. He was ready for the situation. He did everything he could to earn the 10-day call-up. And, you know, we would have loved to see a couple more shots fall, but it just didn't ultimately work out for him like that.
It's so interesting because, to me, it's like if he had made two of the three three-pointers, it's like, would that have been it shouldn't have been the edge. You think in your mind, right? But there's so many variables.
Right. There's so many variables. I wouldn't say that that's what determined it by any means. But it, you know, that's kind of what 10 days are for, to test different guys out, get a look at them in your system. And you know, we saw them in our G League system. It worked. We want to see them in our NBA system. And you know, that's why we took looks at Dante Hall. We took looks at Freddie Gillespie and Henry as well. So you get guys in there, see what it looks like with your big club. And if things click, then, you know, sometimes that's how you get into season deals and into the summer and, you know, part of our program.
And another guy who made a splash in the G League bubble and seemed to be really ascending heading towards the end of the year was Malachi Flynn. Flies off on the private jet six games into and he really had a great end of the season. And now he's in a spot where I imagine in his head, and you can correct me if you think differently, where he's like, his head might be spinning a little bit, hasn't gotten any rotation minutes while the momentum seemed to be in his favor. What's the best advice you think you could give a guy like that other than just to stay ready?
That is the best advice, is don't hang your head, stay ready. You know, your time's gonna come. You know, so when that time does come, you have to go out there and show that you've been preparing for it. The last thing you wanna do is get that opportunity and you've been, you know, hanging your head or not putting in the necessary work. And then when that opportunity comes, you don't go out there and perform. So he knows it, he's a winner. He's been through this. You know, he's had nothing but success everywhere he's been, and you know, we just got to be there to support him. And if it's through the 905, then you know, we're here for him if he needs to get reps. And if it's not, then you know, he's got to continue to put up the reps with the Raptors, and just be prepared for when that time comes.
And last one for you: this is you're entering your sixth season as with the 905.
Is that what it's been since 2017?
2017. So this is you guys doing your fifth season. Okay.
So fourth as GM, fifth season overall.
So outside of the obvious desire, it's crazy, right? Yeah. Outside of the obvious desire, everyone wants to go to the G League, to the NBA. Leaving that aside for a second, what makes this job so enjoyable and making you want to come back year after year?
Oh, I love it. I still get to do the scouting and the day to day, you know, kind of front office personnel evaluations on the Raptor side. But to be here with the 905 is reps that you can't replicate unless you're in Bobby, Dan, and Masai's shoes, you know, on the NBA side. So for me to be here and to deal with players, to deal with coaches, to deal with agents on a daily basis, to transactions, roster moves, cuts, you know, signing players, whatever it may be, those type of reps, you know, I just can't replicate anywhere else. So for me, I love this. You know, I love the G League. I love the guys that I work with on a day-to-day basis, you know, the staff, the players, being part of it. And, you know, hopefully they consider, like, hopefully they feel the love and the passion that we have for the 905 at the same time. And that's kind of what we're here for. So I communicate daily with the Raptors side, and, you know, they know my passion is here and that these reps are valuable for me. So.
Amazing. I really appreciate the time, Chad, and good luck on the upcoming 14-game season, I guess, and then the 36-game following that.
The two-part season, we're looking forward to it. It's definitely, I don't know if it's changed the way coaches plan to attack the season, but, you know, you got a monetary gift, I guess, your prize that you can fight for in the first half, and then you got the championship and the playoffs in the second half. So it's going to be interesting to see how the different teams choose to attack it this year.
Chad, appreciate it.
Thank you.